Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project, Incorporated.
Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart, and that was Amy Bell reading our preamble. Our guest today is Sister Rosa McLarney from the Center for Conflict Resolution, and she and I were both present yesterday at a hearing for Henry Stover of Peaceworks, who crossed over the line on April 22nd, or an imaginary line was crossed on August 22nd of this year, and his hearing was yesterday, and we've got a few minutes of the group meeting before the hearing, and then after that we'll tell you what the results of his trial were. And first we're going to hear Amy read Women's E-News, and then we'll be back with Sister Rosa, and we'll talk about conflict resolution.
Cheers and jeers from Women's E-News. In tears, President Barack Obama is calling on Congress to require companies to give workers up to 7 days of paid sick leave a year, USA Today reported January 15th. Obama will also take executive action to give at least 6 weeks of paid leave to federal employees after the birth or adoption of a child, senior White House advisor Valerie Jarrett said. In addition, Obama wants Congress to spend $2.2 billion to help states and cities develop paid family leave programs. There's simply no excuse for America to lag behind every other industrialized country by failing to provide paid family and medical leave and earn sick days to its workers, said Marsha D. Greenberger, co-president of the National Women's Law Center, who applauded Obama's initiative. The nonprofit campaign, Make It Work, said in a press statement that they are encouraged by the president's proposals and call for further steps to be taken. We must also continue to fight for policies like affordable child care and equal pay for equal work that allow working women and men to make it work. More news to cheer this week. Planned Parenthood launched a campaign urging President Obama to correctly interpret the Helms Amendment. In a press statement, the family planning provider calls on Obama to take immediate action to allow foreign assistance to cover abortions for women who have been raped, who are the victims of incest, or who face a life-endangering pregnancy in countries where those services are legally available. The Helms Amendment prohibits the use of U.S. foreign assistance funds to pay for the performance of abortions as a method of family planning. Women's and health groups have criticized the language for being vague and confusing and leaving room for misinterpretation by aid recipients and USAID staff. The last 20 years has seen a surge in the number of women employed in senior and middle management positions, according to a United Nations report published January 12th. However, the study, Women in Business and Management Gaining Momentum, notes that although all-male company boards are decreasing in number, more must be done to achieve gender parity. The BBC and other broadcasters have been urged to tackle the lack of women in news and current affairs with measures including child care and more flexible working hours, The Guardian reported January 15th. A Lords committee in Britain also added there was evidence to suggest a bias against older women still existed in the broadcasting industry. The United States received a slightly better grade for reproductive health and rights from the Population Institute in 2014, a C rather than a C-. The slight improvement is mostly due to the drop in teen pregnancy rates and the expanded coverage of contraceptive services. The teen pregnancy rate in the U.S. is reported to have fallen 15% between 2008 and 2010, but still remains higher than in other countries. Yet the Institute underscores that although some gains have been made in reproductive health, it could be reversed if social conservatives prevail in Congress and the state legislatures. The human rights arm of the Organization of American States is urging Canada to develop a national action plan or to hold a nationwide inquiry into the murders and disappearances of Indigenous women, the Globe and Mail reported January 12th. The commission also recommends the development of data collection systems that will provide better information about murdered and missing Indigenous women by ensuring that the race of victims and missing people are consistently recorded. It also demands better policies to ensure there is an appropriate response when an Aboriginal woman disappears. In jeers, the nominations for the Academy Awards could be summed up in a few words this year: lack of diversity. The 20 lead and supporting actor nominees were all white, which is the second time this has happened in nearly 20 years, ABC News reported. It sparked the hashtag #OscarsSoWhite, used mostly to criticize the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Women were also largely overlooked, especially in the category for Best Director. The category hasn't seen a single female nominee since 2013, when Kathryn Bigelow won for her film Zero Dark Thirty. More news to jeer this week. A Pew study released January 14th reveals that only 20% of Republican women want to see a female president within their lifetime, The Week reported. Women in Mississippi earn on average $11,500 less than men, according to the Mississippi Commission on the Status of Women. The median income for women in Mississippi is $25,000, compared to $36,500 for men, the Clarion Ledger reported January 14th. The Steubenville, Ohio school superintendent resigned as part of a plea deal to dismiss all charges against him for allegedly deleting evidence and misleading authorities investigating the 2012 rape of a teenage girl by two football players, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported January 12th. Nearly 32% of male respondents to a study said they would force a woman to have sexual intercourse in a consequence-free situation, and many wouldn't label or recognize their actions as rape, BuzzFeed reported January 14th. The U.S. House plans to vote on legislation banning abortions after 20 weeks on the same day as the annual March for Life, January 22nd, The Hill reported January 13th. It will coincide with the anniversary of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision. Planned Parenthood expects the bill to fail. An ultra-Orthodox Jewish newspaper in Israel appears to have edited out female world leaders from a photograph of the recent anti-terrorism rally in Paris, the Huffington Post reported January 13th. Russia has listed transsexual and transgender people among those who will no longer qualify for driving licenses, BBC News reported January 8th. Fetishism, exhibitionism, and voyeurism are also included as mental disorders, now barring people from driving. African Americans currently account for nearly half of all new HIV diagnoses, and among females, 64% of new HIV diagnoses affect Black African American women. A series of articles reporting on the topic are available on the AIDS Patient Care and STDs website. Noted. As the French abortion law, known as La Loi Vielle, is making its 40th anniversary, a study released January 15th shows that fewer women have an abortion. However, the number of women who have more than one abortion is increasing, French media reported. The number of abortions per woman fell to 0.53 in the early 2010s, compared to 0.66 in 1975. According to the National Institute of Demographic Studies, the study, however, found that among women who have undergone an abortion, 10% did it twice and 4% did it three times. One in three French women have voluntarily terminated a pregnancy during their life. The abortion law will turn 40 on January 17th. Doctors Without Borders has opened its first Ebola treatment center to cure infected pregnant women, BBC News reported January 14th. The group says the death rate for expectant mothers is extremely high, and health workers treating them, particularly during childbirth or miscarriage, are especially vulnerable to catching the virus. As a consequence, health workers treating women with pregnancy-related problems in Ebola-hit countries have to make life-or-death decisions for their patients and themselves, Reuters reported January 14th. Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, is backing California Attorney General Kamala Harris in the 2016 race for retiring Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer's seat, the Huffington Post reported January 14th. Early this week, Harris jumped into the race for Boxer's Senate seat. A former journalist who wrote stories about women forced into sex slavery by Japan before and during World War II filed a defamation suit against a publisher and a scholar who accused him of fabricating the issue, the Associated Press reported January 9th. A rising number of pregnant women in Brazil are choosing to give birth via cesarean section to prevent permanent changes to their sex lives, the Daily Mail reported January 12th. The South American country's Ministry of Health is launching a crackdown on the so-called C-section epidemic after new figures revealed 52% of births are cesareans.
And now we're going to hear from a group that was outside the courtroom at 1101 Locust yesterday, and I believe Henry Stover's going to kick this off. He was the defendant in the case against the Kansas City plant crossing the line.
Okay, thank you everyone for coming down to do court support. This judge is a little touchy about noise and little children crying and those kind of things. I think it's been since 2008 that we've been involved in one way or the other with the old plant or the new plant, and we've gotten a good amount of publicity. We even got a front page story in the New York Times about the buildup of weaponry, talking about the dedication that had taken place the month before. And so I don't know, I guess the short version is this is truth or consequence. And many people do not realize the truth that we have a nuclear weapons parts plant. I was actually at my dentist yesterday or the day before, and I was at a bank, and so I just asked the guy, "You from around here?" And he said, "Oh no, Lawrence, but I grew up in the state of Washington." So I said, "Around Seattle or the western part?" And he said, "The western part." And he asked me, "How did I know about the western part? What drew me curiosity?" Eastern part, because his brother works at Hanford plant, and I think he has like another relative, maybe his dad even works there, and you know, they just assume everything is fine there. I said, "What about the leaking barrels?" And I've heard that the Columbia River has taken some of those contaminants on. Well, he didn't, you know, know anything, you know, about that. And so our activism ends up drawing attention to, and we are alive. So truth is, you know, what is going on here, everyone needs to know. And consequences, we're willing to take whatever the consequences are. And we just want to, like, move ahead. When you look at this cycle, you know, of the Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and the atmospheric testing, and then the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty in 1968 that the major powers signed, and most of the other powers signed. And then you look at what Obama has done when he's run on the platform about he's going to reduce nuclear weapons. He said, "In my lifetime, we may not reduce them all yet, but we've got like $50 billion now every year that is going for maintenance, research, development. It is taking it to the total opposite extreme." And that kind of money, what happens? Well, what happens is things that happen in this court. You know, I was there yesterday to make sure that my gizmo worked. And you see people for shoplifting and battering other people and just a lot of, you know, little things. And if we had more educators, more social workers, more people involved in the community, people involved with Journey to New Life and all the other Catholic Worker and Ron's Church and Cherith Brook, if we had more people involved in those things, we would be a safer society. But let's spread the word. I mean, others can, you know, vocalize.
And being as Henry, this is Jane Stover, and Henry, my husband, is on trial today for a trespass action that two other people, one of whom is Jim Hanna, who's here with us today. Anyway, three people did trespass at the new nuclear weapons parts plant on August 22nd, and Henry comes to trial for that. The other two people are doing community service. And I have this little stone, a hope stone. Somebody took the care to put the word hope on this. And we take all of our steps in hope. And I wanted especially to bless Henry in on behalf of his mom and his dad, who brought much beauty to people through their furniture work and who were big truth tellers, and for the steps that he takes in hope. Blessings, my friend. And anybody else who wants to give a little pat to Henry on the shoulder, come on up.
You can even pat me on the butt.
I'm here particularly today, Henry, because you are the single most wonderful jurist in Kansas City who stands up for us and is in trial for us and comes up with elaborate defenses that all get thrown out because they're irrelevant, but we keep putting the truth out there. And I'm living in hope for the day that you're going to actually get to be totally victorious and vindicated, and they're going to say not guilty by reason of insanity.
Thank you.
Insanity and clarity of mind.
Thank you, Georgia.
But thank you for being such a faithful supporter of all of us, and we're with you 100% today in the courtroom.
Thank you, Georgia.
Henry, it's meaningful that you carry on the lantern now, and you're one part of the pieces that make it possible to see a day of peace. We have our joys and our sorrows, but you're an inspiration for carrying the lantern on. And I'm going to just share, this is kind of a general poem that's called Anonymous Choices. Made the day. Choice of 1,000 pieces of peace, or 100,000 stones of fear, shifts humanity's quest to stay alive. Each anonymous piece of peace changes the formula of fear by opening the fist to kindness. Fear is easy, violent, instinctual. Kindness is civil, intelligent, and moves us forward toward life. The choice of fist or open hand exposes our courage. You are the courageous one, Henry Stover.
Thank you. All of you have been. All of you have been.
I just want to bless Henry. God bless you, Henry. I hope that I will hear you say many things in front of that judge. I hope he lets you say them. And I hope you be wise and stay. God
Good.
Bless you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Daniel?
Well, I think we all know that God is in the saving business. And we know what the adversary, what kind of business he's in. And I think that everyone here is into the idea of saving this country. I asked somebody who I consider to be knowledgeable, and I asked him, can this country be saved? And he said, no. He said these corporations are going to be throwing their crowns down at the feet of the Savior. But I applaud what's going on here. I applaud the truth that's being uplifted here, but it will be slammed down time and time again. But I do applaud what's happening here, and I praise it. I raise it up, and I give thanks for it. And it has to happen, and I'm so glad to be some kind of a part of it.
Thank you, Danny.
As we're here on the eve of Martin Luther King's birthday, he said, the choice is now between nonviolence and non-existence. Let's choose nonviolence.
Yes, yes.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people grow up kind of worrying that they'll try something new and get in trouble by their parents. Never had that worry. When, you know, I think it was 2 years ago that I got arrested with my mom. And, you know, not many people can say that as well. But I just want to say that my dad and my mom have both been very courageous in terms of standing up and speaking out about their beliefs. And, you know, I think we are in for an exciting outcome today.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
This is Annalisa, our daughter. One of our two daughters.
Henry, I just want to say that what an inspiration you are to me, and I really, really deeply appreciate you and all you do. And not just for this, but today I want to pause and reflect on this, what you're putting yourself through. You willfully put yourself through this. Nobody likes to be here. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes to be here. And you're a lawyer. And so I really appreciate it doesn't go unnoticed and it doesn't go unappreciated. And I know everyone here appreciates it.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
I just want to confess, first of all, it makes me kind of nervous whenever my attorney goes to court. That's not a good sign. You know? But I really respect you for your conviction. I think you're speaking for untold generations to come, not just for yourself. And I think that's very admirable, and I'm proud to be associated with it. And I wish you the best of days. Best of this story.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks.
Henry, if there's hope for this world, it's because of people like you. Hope. Thank you.
All of you are signs of hope.
Support for 90.1 FM provided by Communiversity. They have classes in wheel throwing, Spanish bagpiping, parenting parrots, and tons more. You can Google Communiversity/UMKC, or you can call 816-235-1407 for more info and discover the world of possibilities that Communiversity has to offer.
This Tuesday on Radioactive Magazine, join me, Dan Connolly, as I present a discussion by Mary Lindsay and Mike Dean, members of the Kansas City chapter of Move to Amend, concerning the fifth anniversary of the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision that established that money is speech. Join us for a review of the history of corporate personhood, how the Supreme Court's decision has affected our democracy, and the future of Move to Amend. This Tuesday at 6 p.m. on 90.1 FM KKFI.
This is Sharon Lockhart with Amy Bell, and you're tuned to Every Woman. And we just, before those messages, heard from Henry Stover and a group of loyal supporters in the work that Henry and Jane are doing, along with many other dedicated people, to show and educate about the danger of nuclear weaponry and the plant here in Kansas City. I think they've renamed it something like the National Security Campus or something like that. I believe that's what I heard yesterday. Sister Rosa was there with me. And I would like to say, though, that Henry was victorious yesterday. It's like maybe the first case that they've actually won. The judge, who is from Cuba, started out, and I wasn't sure where she was going with it, but how she ruled was that he was not guilty by intent to criminal act. There was no criminal intent, and I think they call that in reis.
Correct.
And that also there was no proof that he crossed over any imaginary line. Nobody knew where the line was. So on two counts, he was not guilty. And it was a marvelous triumph for him.
It was a real surprise to everybody because in two previous situations where defendants had gone before other judges and they tried to use the proof of that they can't prove where the line really is. But the judge in those instances did not do that. But Judge Bland, over a year ago, the sentence that he gave them, he did find them guilty, but the sentence that he gave them was to write an essay about why nuclear weapons are so dangerous, and if somebody else has them, he gave various scenarios that they were to respond to. And those are public record and can be found on the city website. And that was his sentence to them, instead of sentencing them to jail or community service or other things, was he wanted them to make a public record of their opposition to nuclear weapons, which I thought was ingenious.
It was great. And yesterday the judge's name was Judge Franco. And anyway, it's just they're probably still celebrating the win. And
yes.
And who knows? We made a comment about justice being blind. Isn't that what they say? Justice is blind? Or
I think that's the idea.
It's blind? Well, I don't know. How do you have the same, counsel or the same arguments?
Yeah.
And one way it's ruled guilty, the next way it's ruled not guilty. But it's just kind of like whimsical judges or something. But that's a whole nother show. Now let's get started with Sister Rosa McLarney, who is with the Center for Conflict Resolution, and she does some interesting work in the community. Do you want to tell us about that and how this came about?
Yes, I would love to. I'm a member of the board of directors of the Center for Conflict Resolution, and so I'm not on staff, but I also do some volunteering with them. And the more I get involved, the more excited I am about the work that they're doing. And it's because there's conflict any place that we go. And so the more that we can learn how to handle those conflicts, then the more peaceful our lives are going to be. And, of course, conflict will escalate. And in terms of, you know, why are there murders? It usually begins with some kind of a conflict between two people. In Kansas City itself, it's not as much gang-related as most people think. And it's not, you know, there are instances of domestic violence, but not as much as what people usually think. It is a matter of sometimes it's neighbors who have a dispute about the property line or about a driveway or something like that, and it just keeps building and building until it ends up in violence. And so the more that we can intervene and people have skills for handling conflicts, the earlier, then the better. And so the Center for Conflict Resolution goes into schools, and that's one of the things I do is I volunteer every Wednesday and go to Southwest High School with some of the staff from the center, and we do mediations between students that get into fights. And I have absolutely no doubt that some of those fights would probably end up in violence if they were not mediated and have the two people sit down that are having the difficulty and have them be able to talk with one another. And respectful listening is one of the things we try to teach them, to listen to what the other person is saying and why are they upset, what's going on in their life, what are their interests, what is so harmful to them about that. And once somebody can hear the harm they're doing to somebody else, then frequently they will change their perspective and they're able to hear that. And we also have classes with students that are referred to us in conflict management and conflict resolution.
What does a typical, when you go into a meeting with two students who have an argument, how does that look?
We sometimes will meet with them individually ahead of time to find out, you know, what's going on with them. Sometimes for an individual, if there's something going on in their family situation or their grades are really bad, or there's something else they're upset about. And so then a conflict with another individual just makes it that much worse, or they're more likely to get into conflict. So knowing that kind of thing helps. And then once we've met with each of them, we would have them sit down across from each other, and we would have them develop guidelines so that only one talks at a time. And we first have one person tell from their perspective what happened, and the other person doesn't talk during that time. So you don't get into this bantering back and forth. And it really try to work toward respectful listening, so they really hear one another. And then the other person gets a chance to tell their perspective of what happened and what's going on and why they're so upset. And then we say, well, what would be a way that the two of you could be together in this school and not have future conflict, or not have, you know, future violence or fighting? And they try to work that out. And we say, you don't have to be best friends. We're not asking you that. We're just saying, how can you focus on your school, focus on why you're here, and not have this as a disturbance? And I was thrilled last week that one of the students, when we said, well, how are things going for you? She said, my grades have really improved. And we said, why do you think that's happened? And she said, there's less drama. She said, I'm not involved in all this conflict, and I'm able to focus on my education. And so we said, does that make you feel good? And she said, yes. So she feels better about herself, which is only going to continue to improve. So that's an example of how things can be turned around. Sometimes things don't always go so well. Sometimes it takes more than once for somebody to learn something. And if they come from an environment where all they see is conflict and yelling and violence, then sometimes it takes some of those classes, a number of sessions in the classes, for them to really see there is another way of doing it. One of the other things that I think is making a real difference for Kansas City are the neighborhood accountability boards. And the city prosecutor, together with the Center for Conflict Resolution, set up so that first-time offenders who have a low-level offense have the option to come before the victim, whoever they offended, and some members of the community that have gone through a training program. And those individuals would gather together, and we usually do it at a church on Troost, and talk about, again, the victim gets to say what was the impact on them of what happened. So again, the harm that's done is brought out, and the offender gets to say whatever they want to say. And frequently we say, tell us about your thinking. What were you doing, and what were you thinking before this all happened? What's the situation in your life? And again, sometimes we discover that they've got a lot of turmoil in their life. And so then the victim and the offender, together with the community members, get to say, well, this is the impact on the community. And that group says, well, this is what would make it right. This is what the consequences could be, and everybody has to agree to it. And if the offender completes that agreement, then they don't get a criminal record. And that's very significant, because anyone with a criminal record has a hard time getting jobs, housing, almost anything. So it's a wonderful opportunity for people that are first-time offenders. And also, once they realize the impact of their crime on someone else, they're less likely to offend.
Do you see them often committing crimes a second time after they've gone through this program?
The program's been going about 2 years, maybe a little less than 2 years. And from the records that we've gotten, as far as we know, no one has reoffended.
That's a pretty outstanding record you've got going.
Right. Yeah.
And do you see this as something that it's not a one-time event, though, in this mediation process? These are skills that they're taking into other interactions.
Correct. And part of what also we, in each of the situations that we are with conflict resolution, we say, well, what would be some other options of how you could have acted? And, for example, if somebody did shoplifting, with one person, it was because they didn't have a doll for their daughter for Christmas. So we said, well, you know, what can you think of another way that you could have handled that instead of shoplifting? And sometimes community members will pipe in and say, you know, well, our church has a giving program. We would have been glad to have helped you. So they learn other choices that they could make. So, yes, it does change their choices and their thinking.
Well, it sounds like it can also change the way the community feels about these, put in air quotes, criminals.
Right.
Are you seeing a lot of that? Are you seeing the community start to really understand what kind of situations people
Absolutely.
Find themselves in
yeah.
that they,
yeah.
And maybe a lot of times wrongly feel like a criminal action is their only outlet?
Yeah. And when we label people and we, you know, when I read in the newspaper or see any place or hear that someone is a thug, I just get upset immediately, because once you meet people that, you know, they are people. Something in their life has gone wrong that has brought them to where they are. And they don't set out, you know, saying this is going to be my path in life. Something carries them there. And so they are not thugs. They are people. And another statistic is that one out of every 32 Americans is in the criminal justice system in some way. So it's people that you pass every day, people that you know. It's an astounding figure, yeah.
Could that include traffic tickets, traffic violations, too?
No, it's people that are on parole, probation, have a conviction. Yeah.
Yeah. That is an incredible number.
Yeah.
What you mentioned, well, I have to comment here, appropriately or not, that when you said the word thug, I thought, oh, that's how they characterized, was his name Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri,
yeah.
as a
right.
thug.
Yes.
They dehumanized him.
Correct.
By labeling
right.
him a thug.
Mm-hmm.
And that just hit me. I just thought I'd point that out.
Yeah, because the word thug has become synonymous with a problem that needs to be dealt with in our society. Like, we need to expel this cultural phenomenon that is the, air
yeah.
quotes again, thug.
Yeah.
And so using that terminology
uh-huh.
makes them seem irredeemable.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned these neighborhood sort of organizations, or that they ask to be a part of it, or how does one come about being part of one of these?
Well, every time there is a conviction, the prosecutor, of course, gets that record, and then they choose if it's assigned, you know, where it's assigned, and so the city prosecutor will, instead of sending it to the court system, sends a letter to the person and says, you have the option to go to this neighborhood accountability board instead of going to court. And so that's how it gets referred. And then the other thing that can happen is some of the judges in the both in the city courts as well as in county courts, or the state courts can refer cases for mediation instead of having it go to court. Sometimes it's domestic violence. Sometimes it's neighbors. Sometimes it's landlord-tenants, disputes. And those can go to mediation. And it's kind of the same process that I explained that happens in the school. So that, again, it's settled there where people really learn about one another, and it's more than just going before a judge and he says you've got a fine. Instead, they really learn about one another, and the offender realizes the harm that was done, which changes them.
I am kind of... There is conflict every place. I belong to a very small homes association, and we have two new board members who were old board members for years and years and years, and they lost their election a year ago, and now they're back on the board, and it's like they got an axe to grind with this new board. And I might just throw out there your contact information the next time one of these crazy emails comes through from one of these new board members. It's like, why don't we contact this conflict resolution group and see how we might resolve this problem? Are you guys up for something like that?
Certainly. And another method of handling conflict that might work with, like, a neighborhood association or even in a business or in a school, is called a circle. And it's where the individuals involved sit down in a circle, and there's a talking piece. So only one person talks at a time, and everybody else has to listen. So, again, you get rid of that bantering and that quick talking back and forth. And people are much better able to really hear one another and hear what's underneath what the perspective of people is, and hear the harm that, you know, that's being done by their actions, or also be able to say perhaps harm that's being done to them. And so circle might be another process that would be used like that. And also the mediation or the Center for Conflict Resolution has training programs in all of these different techniques, in restorative discipline. So there's parenting, teaching parenting how to use restorative discipline with their children that helps to teach them conflict resolution instead of just punishing for the sake of punishing.
How would one learn more about these classes that are available?
The center has a wonderful website. And that's www.cckc.org. And also their phone number is 816-461-8255. And they have some training that's coming in March. But they also have trainings in the summer, like in June.
And is this something that other cities around the country have similar programs, or is this a standalone group here in Kansas City?
Well, this is a community-based nonprofit, but there are other restorative justice efforts in many other states. In fact, in some places, like in New Zealand, their whole juvenile system is based on restorative justice, so they would use the kind of processes that I mentioned. And in Maine, the state of Maine, it's either Maine or Vermont, they have community justice centers throughout the state instead of the court system for juveniles. So there are places that are actually further ahead than we are, but this is a wonderful thing that Kansas City has, and unfortunately a lot of people don't know about it.
Well, I'm glad I sat down next to you yesterday.
Yes.
And mentioned that we were shy of a guest today because we'd been negotiating with the Women's Law Center, National Women's Law Center out of D.C., and at the last minute their guest fell through, so I'm certainly glad that I met you yesterday, except you're back for the second time.
Yes.
You were here before with, what were you talking about?
I was talking about Journey to New Life.
Okay.
Which is actually a collaborative partner with the center, because they work with men and women as they come out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so the center has helped to teach them conflict resolution skills.
Sounds like a valuable program, and I'm interested myself in some, maybe a mediation class and learning some skills, because sometimes my mouth can just quickly go off, and I probably should be a little more thoughtful before I make a comment.
One of the other advantages for Kansas City is that Chief Forte, the chief of police, took the mediation and conflict resolution classes. And now four police officers have taken that training. And one of them mentioned recently that he sees a difference, or people have commented to him in the difference they see in how he handles people, that he handles it in a much more nonviolent, well, I don't want to say nonviolent, but in a much more skilled way.
Yeah, because I can see how police officers' attitudes can escalate a situation pretty quickly.
Right.
And I can see that that would be, in fact, you would think it would be required conflict resolution.
Well, that, I mean, that may come about. It may be that that would be part of the police academy training. Would include more of the conflict resolution skills.
Do they have programs like this in areas, other areas of Missouri, like around St. Louis? Or
St. Louis does have some things, but they don't have a center for conflict resolution like this. Yeah.
And how many volunteers are there, and are you always looking for more volunteers to get trained? And
they can always use more volunteers, yes. And some examples is some churches have invited any volunteers from their church, and then as a church group, they took some of the training. And then they volunteer with either in the schools, or they volunteer with the neighborhood accountability boards. Also, the center has gone into some of the neighborhoods and done conflict resolution skill classes with the community members in that neighborhood. So that would be another way that people could get involved. And so, yes, they can always use more volunteers.
And what is that website again?
It's www.cckc.org.
So if you can remember, CC stands for conflict.
It's Center for Conflict Resolution. So it's cckc.org.
Yeah, that's pretty simple to remember.
Yeah. You know, I was wondering if this was somebody, if somebody was interested in having this in their community, if you help other people start up in their community, because is this just in Kansas City, Missouri?
We serve the greater Kansas City area.
And you have deals with the court systems?
Or
is that only in Kansas City, Missouri, that you're able to get the first-time offenders?
No, we would go any place. Both Kansas and Missouri could utilize this.
I guess what I'm asking, do they? Does the Kansas City, Kansas court system refer people to you?
Not that I know of, but I'm not 100% sure of that. Yeah. The center is a part of the Missouri Restorative Justice Coalition, which does function statewide. And so we network throughout Missouri to get even laws changed and things changed so that it's a restorative approach. And and we help with efforts for it to be developed in other places where it's non-existent. Another thing I could mention is that Avila University and the Center for Conflict Resolution are co-sponsoring a free restorative justice conference that will talk more about this on March 26th from 9 to 4. And so we can remind people of that closer to the time. But that's an opportunity for anyone to come to that.
And that's probably a Saturday, isn't it?
No, actually, it's a Thursday.
But maybe I can make it.
Yes.
Great. Saturdays, usually I reserve to be here from 2 till 4 p.m. today, from noon until 4. Amy's going to be here from noon until 5 today. She'll be engineering and perhaps interviewing for Urban Connection. We're not sure. Donna Wolf had a loss in her family, a young son, and so that's a tragedy, and we're helping to cover for her. So back to the restorative justice, or we will definitely put that on our calendar, which is reminding me. Have you got the calendar pulled up, Amy?
I do.
Good. Is it time for us to start the calendar? It might be a little early, but not too early. Let's finish up here. Any other points you'd like to really bring out?
Well, I think one of the things is another interesting part that the center is doing more with is called Friendly Style Profile for Intimate Partners. And so it helps individuals realize, you know, they go through a training and a profile, and they look at their compatibility and their ability to be together in a helpful way to both of them. And so that's, for example, something that prevents a lot of conflict from happening so that it's less domestic violence. So there's many of those things that if anybody is having issues, say, between partners, the trained staff would be able to handle that for them. And they could do that through the same contact information of the center.
Now, you've mentioned so many things that you're doing. I'm wondering, what kind of a staff and volunteer base do you must have?
Well, they have excellent staff that have had, of course, excellent training. And no one does mediations or does any of these processes unless they have had that full training. And there's even specialized training. For example, I haven't been trained in the domestic violence, so I would not go into a mediation or go into this profile because I haven't had that training. So they have, I think they have 8 staff members, and then others are volunteers that do this, but all of them have had the trainings.
And that website again is
www.cckc.org.
And that's probably the easiest way. You might give a phone number if you've got one, because not everyone has access to the internet at their fingertips anyway.
I've got a phone number right here for them.
Oh,
it
good.
Is
okay.
816-461-8255.
Right.
That's 816-461-8255.
Well, thank you, Sister Rosa McLarney, for being our guest today and telling us about this. This sounds marvelous.
It really is. It seems so cutting edge and very progressive in the full sense of that word.
And it makes me think Jean Peters Baker is doing a marvelous job.
Oh, she is. She's doing a wonderful job.
Yeah, well, see, she's a woman. I just had to bring that up. They say,
so,
you know, we would maybe things could be better if we got more women in more positions of power.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because they partner with the Kansas City NOVA, the No Violence Alliance that Jean Peter Baker brought up, has started. And so the center is a part of that and works with them as well.
Oh, great.
Well, I think we have a few calendar announcements before the end of the show, but thank you for coming onto the show and sharing this wonderful program you've got working here, and we hope to have you back again sometime to discuss this further.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
All right, we've got a few events coming up this week. On Monday, January 19th, from 3:30 to 5 p.m., the annual Martin Luther King Forum is being held at the Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church, 2310 East Linwood Boulevard, KCMO. On Tuesday, January 20th, there are a couple of events. From 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., there's the warm-up at the Women's Center at UMKC, which is located in 106 Hague Hall, 5120 Rock Hill Road. And later that evening at 6:30, there is the AAUW Kansas City Branch Meeting, and they is going to feature guest speaker Adrian Anderson and the AAU Fellowship awardee at the Heart Song Singers will perform. And that is located at 1012 West 66th Terrace in Kansas City, Missouri. On Thursday, January 22nd, from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., the Greater Kansas City Women's Political Caucus will have a general council meeting at the All Souls Unitarian Church, 4501 Walnut Street, Kansas City, Missouri. And next Saturday, January 24th at 11:30 a.m., there's a luncheon hosted by the Global and Multicultural Education. It's the 8th Annual Peace Builder Awards Luncheon. It's at Lydia's Restaurant, 101 West 22nd Street. And I think that basically sums up the week in events. If you are an activist woman that wants to get out there and find some more involvement in your community, those are some options where you can do that.
And those will be on our Facebook page, too.
Absolutely. And now we need to remind you to stay tuned for Urban Connections and guess who's coming to Kansas City.